You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, and welcome back to Lovecraft Country Critical. Yay.
Yay. Yay. Is that you want us to cheer?
Yeah. That was a cue for cheer. we are back today to talk about episode 3, Holy Ghost. And I am joined, you've heard all of those voices, so I'm joined by Gaz, down under.
Hello. Hello.
What's he doing down there?
John, not down under.
Yeah, you're right.
And Len in his new house. Exciting.
Yeah. Very exciting. This episode, right? Yeah, just before we get into it or whatever.
Haunted.
I've literally just moved house, brand new house, and it's not a brand new house, it's an old house, but I've moved into a
what
new
is
house.
This? Realestate.com.
I was joking about a week ago. I was joking with my girlfriend. I was like, what if it was haunted? Because I've always worried that when you actually move into a house, it's going to stay in for a long time. What if it's actually haunted, right? And then this bloody episode happened, and I was a bit like, well, it's a bit weird time.
Yeah, that's definitely haunted.
Have you got a creepy basement? Or
no, but I have been woken up several... Well, this is the thing. For the last two nights in a row, I've been woken up by howling because my Great Dane has not settled well. And then I also woke up the other night with her just standing over me. So make of that what you will.
Hungry, going to eat you in the night. I'm also in a different house. So I've temporarily moved in with my parents.
Do they stand over your bed randomly at night as well?
No, but the cat does because she hates me.
They do howl in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah, but that's normal. They've done that for years. Before we get completely caught up in talking about houses and hauntings, I think it's time to talk about what we're actually here for. So if you are joining us for the first time, welcome. We are here to talk about the new HBO series, Lovecraft Country. We've been covering this since it launched a few weeks ago. We're on the third episode. So what we will do over the course of this podcast is give an overview of the show, what we thought of it, talk through the plot, make our way over to Cthulhu Corner. Hopefully Gaz gets a bit of Lovecraft Lounge.
Absolutely.
A bit of listener feedback. And then leave you
worst
to think.
Line of the week.
Oh, yeah. And worst John. Line of the week.
Definitely remember to do that. So
so let's kick off. I want to talk about what we thought about the episode as a whole, and a blueberry score and an explanation of thus system. Len, kick us off, please, with what you thought of Holy Ghost.
Mm. Okay, I will. Before that, as you said, the blueberry scale. This is how we rate everything here at Fan Critical on a scale of 0 to 5 blueberries. And there can be no half blueberries. It is a harsh but fair scale, okay? The season's doing pretty well so far. Tracking pretty well. I'd say the average so far is a 4 across the board. So I said after last week, which I felt was always going to be a tricky episode because there's just so much they wanted to cram into that episode. And it obviously goes very fantastical with the spells. And we talked about that and talked about how it was a little bit problematic. And I was hoping that they would go into the sort of more episodic route, similar to what the book does. And I was thrilled to see that they have gone down that route. And I really enjoyed this episode. I would say that the whole idea of like in the book of like Letty and Ruby pioneering into this white neighborhood was really fascinating to sort of read in the book. And I thought they did a really good job of realizing that for the screen. Not only that, you've got the sort of haunted house storyline that runs parallel to it. And I thought this was just, it was kind of the camp horror that we've actually been talking about for the last two episodes. But some of it was brutal. I love some of the effects. Some of the other effects, which I'm going to talk to John about later, I'm sure I didn't like. But overall, I absolutely loved this story. And the thing about it as well is like the moments between the characters were fantastic this week. Like, I know there's all the supernatural stuff going on around it, but the conversations with, like, and we'll talk about it in more detail, between Montrose and Tick, I loved. The conversations between like Hippolyta and whoever she was talking to because of the grieving of George, Letty and Ruby, and that fantastic sort of moment their relationship completely breaks down halfway through the episode. For me, it was that was some great character stuff, and it made me very emotional. So I am going to give this episode 4 blueberries. I don't think it's as good as the premiere. I really enjoyed it, and I think hopefully the show will kick on from that troublesome second episode, and we'll see a lot more sort of consistency, sort of monster of the week stories now throughout the season. So 4 from me, Em.
Interesting. Okay, Gaz, what about you?
All right, we're gonna. This might be a very top heavy blueberry section because you're getting all the positivity out the way first. Because I'm looking at John's face, and I'm like, right, don't worry about him. Remember what you thought of this episode. And yeah. I'm going to tell you...
Don't listen to Little John.
I loved this episode. It went for an hour and I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of it. Now, that isn't to say that everything that happened was necessarily brilliant in terms of production values. And as Leonard's foreshadowed, we will touch upon some of them. But in terms of the story, this individual story that happened, it's so well contained. Whilst also kind of weaving the longer running narrative into it. Like, compared to last week, it's so tight in terms of storytelling. The music was back on track. Like, I hated the music in last week's episode. Mm. Loved it in episode 1 and loved it again this episode. Journey Smollett, her performance in this, like, she steals the show.
She was amazing, wasn't she?
So good.
Incredible.
She was just phenomenal.
The, like, baseball bat and the car scene, that's one of the coolest.
Oh, I love it.
That's
love
just
that.
So fucking cool. Now, the horror elements of this episode were weird. There were times where it was literally Goosebumps and times where it was literally Hellraiser 12 or whatever they're up to with the Hellraiser movies. And it's kind of hard to reconcile
the TV
that.
Show Goosebumps.
No, that's what I meant, the TV show. Like, some of the effects, oh my word, they were bad. But in a way, I kind of enjoyed it. I don't know why. I allowed myself to enjoy that this week, whereas I didn't last week. And at its heart, this was a dramatic story about, like, a haunted house. But it also works as a drama about, like, redlining and pioneering and systematic racism. Yeah. And I thought it was really good. And I'm giving it 5 blueberries.
Wow.
There you go. He's giving it a smash bang and wallop 5.
I was not expecting that. I was expecting a 4 blue from you. That is amazing. Brilliant.
You go next, Emma.
John, I'm going to head to John next and I'm going to round things off nicely at the end. So, John... hit me with your blueberry stick.
Baseball bat.
Yeah, I'd quite like to at this point. Right, so I think I'm going to delight a fair few of our listeners, actually, because there seems to be quite a lot of people that are enjoying this series and loving it for what it is. If this is a show that is giving you what you want to see, in terms of the way in which they're scoping the story and the production and the way in which, as Gaz says, they are very self-contained episodes. It kind of nothing in this appears to be kind of linear, certainly in the way that I would expect kind of most HBO productions to go. Kind of feels a bit like American Horror Story or something like that, I guess.
I
can see that. I can see that.
Yeah, and that's another series that I abandoned after 3 episodes. So the reason that I'm going to delight people is I can't pod on this anymore because, do you know what? I quite like this this house vibe. As a self-contained episode, yeah, I was enjoying it. Got to a point where I was like, oh, do you know what? I think this is going to be the best episode for me. And and then the ghosts. Now, there's about the highlight of the episode. Gaz has mentioned kind of the stomp outside, smashing the cars up, stopping the horns, the beeping going. Really cool, and like, yeah, right, it's gonna kick on from here. And then it just turns into a completely different show again. It's like, no, don't worry about any of that interesting stuff, fucking in the bathroom and all that. Don't worry about that. That was good stuff. And then we get this, like, in about 2 minutes or something, I guess. We go from the back of a police car where they're talking about why they've bought the house. And I was kind of like, do you know what? I'll let the exposition go there. Oh, how have you ended up buying this house? It's quite expensive, blah, 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 blah. Goes back to the house, photos. Oh, yeah, the photos. And then, oh, why is his head coming out of the ground?
Yeah.
I had the John moment when that happened, because that was, for me, that's the weakest effects moment. But I thought it was Ghostbusters 2, John, is what I was going to say to you. It reminded me of Ghostbusters 2. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was 1990, wasn't it? Like, fucking 30 years ago.
Yeah, still classic.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, so Slimer goes past. But so we go from that, and then from there, it's downhill. And I'm like, it lost me. This is not for me. And the way it ends, which is very like, no, because remember that? No, the last episode did matter, right? This was a filler. And then we will go back to the... Ah, right, okay. So we are doing the magic stuff again. This is not for me. And I suspect there's quite a few people that feel exactly how I feel. I've had some messages of support on Twitter, which is always nice. For me, it's another 2 bloobs. Everyone else can enjoy this bizarre, bizarre series.
Thank you, John. Nice little mix of scores so far. I think I might bring it some, even it out a little bit. I enjoyed this episode, but I didn't enjoy it as much as the first two. I think that I'm not surprised that it's going to divide opinion. You know, there are some parts of it that are a bit rompy and a bit, yeah, you know, teenage goosebumps kind of thing. I think it's really difficult for me because this part of the book I really loved. And there are some things that are different.
Yeah, really I agree different. With some of the changes, Em, I was going to say to you. We'll get onto those, but...
Yeah, and I don't want to talk about them in interesting. Detail. Yeah, interesting. And I think if we're going for a sort of monster of the week, which it looks like we are, it makes sense. And for someone who hasn't read the book, I think, you know, like Gaz, for example, really enjoyed this episode. Fantastic. I think for me, it's just that I felt such strength in the way the storyline in the book went around this part of it. And I felt such a kind of like strong love for it. And that really developed some of the characters for me in a different way. I think it fell down a bit. But there were some excellent scenes in it. You know, we've mentioned some of them, like the baseball bat, even the arrest, like Letty in the back of the police van, I thought was fantastic. And just that fear that you felt simmering as they, you know, you talk about this pioneering and, you know, as they move into this white neighbourhood, that simmering fear under the surface I thought was done really well. And I thought some of the performances were really great. There's also, you know, some really good things in here that have historical weight, which are really interesting. So I've actually just been reading a really interesting book about some of the most controversial experiments, like psychological and medical experiments of the 20th century. One of those is hinted at here, which is very interesting. I did, however, have a bit of an awkward moment. So, sex scene, good. Just as we panned back to look at Tick's naked, bare backside, my dad walked in.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Standing awkward. Over you again.
Yeah, creepy. But- totally creepy. I'm going to give this 3 blueberries. And a lot of that
everyone
is the story
with a different
language.
Score.
Yeah, we already get that.
Very
so that's interesting.
Interesting.
2, 3, 4, and 5.
That is very interesting. I think the thing is with this show, I think, and the book, it's such an interesting, and this is the thing that I think is some people could look at it and really struggle, like and just not enjoy it. Like John has just expressed that he doesn't like the meshing of these genres and the way that that's being shown to him and to people in a way that it is difficult. Like it in the book, there's more room for imagination. So you know when someone you know says they're going to do a spell in the book or whatever, you imagine that the way you want to imagine that. The way this is being shown, they've gone down a very specific route, and they're trying to obviously the book is all about these larger themes about racism and systemic racism and living in that time in America, and then the magic and it sort of just nudges that in the you know it's how it's in relation to that. It's the, that plays into the bigger theme. And here, I think they are struggling a little bit with how they're getting that across. I think this episode did a far better job than last week's episode. And I think the first episode did a fantastic job. I think last week, as we said, there was a little stumble. But I can see how some people, that the show just isn't for them. Because it is so, like John said, the turns are very sharp. It's like being turned in that car with Letty in the back of it. They're whiplash turns. They are whiplash turns. 1 minute, you know, you've got these serious beats about pioneering and, like John said, living and trying to break into these white neighborhoods. And Letty's obviously a strong character who doesn't want to give in, doesn't want to buckle. And then you've also got that reflected, a strong character reflected in the fact that there's a malevolent ghost in the house and she's performing some sort of exorcism. So it is literally a sharp left turn, then a sharp right turn. And that is the way it plays in the book as well. You know, it is like that. But maybe your mind softens some of those turns when you are the one designing those scenes in your head.
Whereas
someone is presenting to you their vision of it, I think it can obviously be very jarring for people. But, you know, a lot of us are enjoying it. I'm sorry that John isn't enjoying it because I really enjoy
I don't care.
His critical opinion.
I'm not, actually.
I really enjoy his opinion on shows because I think it's a good counterbalance to what I experience, and that's what I like having a conversation with, you know, trying to figure out.
I'll still text you and go slow as shit, mate. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
No, and I think it's good to have that variety of opinion. You know, it gets boring hearing us all go 5 bloops. But I think you're right. I think that actually the challenge here that you don't get so much in the book is that we're straddling 3 different things. We're talking about societal racism, then there's Monster of the Week Supernatural, and then there is you know the underlying story of the Braithwaites, and all of that can be a bit jarring, and it's not for everyone. But look, I think there's a lot to talk about during the plot, and I definitely want to get onto that, but I am first going to hand over to Len for a little advert break.
Hello, yes, welcome to the advert. And this week, what we're going to ask you to do is simply subscribe to the channel. So if you are listening on any of the podcast platforms or Spotify, please do subscribe to this channel, Lovecraft Country Critical. Your support is very muchly appreciated. And if you like anything that we do and the general discussions that we like, and I promise you, John does like some things. And if you want to find those things, they will be over on our fan Critical channel. All you have to do is search Fan Critical on any podcast app, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, etc. And on there, you'll see reviews for films like Avengers Endgame, or How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That Series, or John and Gaz's patented Worst of Netflix series. I can I can safely say that he doesn't like anything on there. Right. So all you need to do is search Fan Critical, and please do subscribe to that. And if you do want to support us further, we would really, really appreciate it if you could go to www.patreon.com/fancritical and donate some money to the podcast, to the team, so that we could produce more content for you guys, get better equipment. It goes towards hosting costs. It all goes towards the show. We love podcasting on different shows, different films, coming up with new ideas. And if you go onto that Patreon site, you'll see that your money does get you bonus content. It gets you access to the cast episodes. It gets you access to our Discord server where you can talk to us or just shoot us a message whenever you like. It also, if you pay for a certain amount, you can commission a podcast once a month. And we've had some great commissions recently. We have done films like No Country for Old Men, Midsommar, Hereditary, World War Z, the list goes on. And commission podcasts are great because it means that we get to, you tell us what to do basically, and it means we'd have to think about it, which is quite nice. And they're all classics that we've covered so far, so it's good fun. So please do check that out. Go to patreon.com/fancritical, and any monetary support that you can give us would be amazing. So thank you very much, everyone. And thank you for the great reception we've had so far at the start of this Lovecraft Country Critical run. If you do want to leave us a review, please do go and do so on Apple iTunes. Anyway, back to you in the studio, Em.
Cheers, Len. Well, let's dive into the plot. So we open up the episode with Letty at a church service, and we see a woman at the front of the congregation who I believe is catching the Holy Ghost. And it's a really interesting opening scene because there's this, you know, there's a great energy in the church, and there's a lot yes. going on. Mm. And Letty is not standing with the rest of the congregation. She looks very forlorn, very lost.
Doing a bit of crying.
And it's an interesting way to open. How did you feel about this opening scene, Gaz?
Yeah, I really liked it. Thought it was quite powerful. What is it that's being played over the top of
the music?
Yeah,
it's like it's a song that I know quite well, Gareth, but I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
That's how well he knows it.
Very well at all, then.
Pretty well. But it's that slow sort of like.
Yeah,
that sort of thing going on, and it's sort of counterintuitive to the usual. I'll drop it in here so you can understand what I mean. Here you go. And it's that sort of like the yeah. There you go. Yeah, thanks. Good.
Can we stop playing it over and over?
Out.
Yeah, just repeat on repeat. It's just that difference between obviously the energy that Emma's talking about there, and the fact that we need to remember that at the start of this episode that Letty has come back from the dead. Right? Okay. Now, yeah, that doesn't happen in the book. That's going to affect you in certain ways. We can talk about it later in Cthulhu Corner and how some of the text mentioned in this episode relates to that, but. What I will say is, like, Letty, you've got to remember, put yourself in her shoes here. She's been resurrected, essentially. This energy, she's not feeling it at the moment. And throughout the episode, no. We get the sense that she's trying to recapture that energy. She's trying to recapture her passion for life. And you see that, like, it's just so juxtaposed in the next scene. We'll talk about it in a minute with Ruby. So I thought this opening was very good and a great start for Journey Smollett, who does a fantastic job this episode.
Yeah,
so there you awesome. Go, Emma, in answer to your question, that's what I thought of it.
Thanks, Gaz. I really appreciate
Fuck
that.
Me. What I will say is I don't know why the juxtaposition of the music and the action worked really well for me at this point. But it didn't work for me at all in last week's episode. I'm not sure why. I mean, that was a pretty decent analysis of it, to be fair, Len. But I'm not sure that's what I was thinking at the time. But it worked. I really liked it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Actually, if you think about it from a book perspective, in the book, Letty has much more religion.
Yeah.
And reliance upon God. So for me, it was really interesting to see her, I think, struggling with it. You know, after everything that's happened. The other thing that we get at the beginning of the episode is a black screen with some text, which yes. says, in the summer of 1955, a group of Negro men and women moved into a house on the north side of Chicago. 10 days later, three people went missing inside the house, never to be seen again. Pioneering is dangerous. Bit of a... So this episode, slightly off at a tangent, has a really different structure to it. So we've got screens giving us day one, day two, day five, right the way through. We've got this opening text to kind of ground us in it, which is really, really different to the first two episodes. And I'm interested to see if that continues. John, this isn't normally something that you're a fan of.
Well, no. What, day one, day two? No, that's... No, I mean, it's a stylistic choice. I mean, if they'd have just gone, like, Tuesday, and then someone's like, oh, it's Tuesday today, isn't it? I'll be like, why is he saying that? Stop saying that. no, look, it's a stylistic choice. I quite liked it, actually. I thought, again, look, if you accept that they're all going to be self-contained episodes, and I suspect that a lot of them are going to have very different styles. It did sort of remind me of American Poltergeist, but I guess it's quite a tropey thing, isn't it? I'm just trying to think where they
does a very good job of it.
Yeah, I guess so. That is a classic, though. That is Five Blues.
Yeah, I agree. Do you know what this reminded me of, John? And this takes us back to... and I really liked it, actually. I thought this was done well. But it takes me back to those drunken nights where me, you and Emma used to head over to Emma's on a Monday night and talk about The Walking Dead. There used to be always an episode a season, or like they thought they were being really clever and they were using it. They just completely shifted the storytelling devices like randomly in an episode. And you're like, what are you doing? It looks like a student
film.
That's
what it made me think of.
I actually think they did a good job here. Like, this gives us, like you said, Em, it gives us a reference point. And I thought, like John said, it was fine.
Just coming back to that Walking Dead thing, they were on, like, fucking season 7 and about 200 episodes in. So they're obviously running out of things to keep it interesting. It's like, are the zombies still about? Yep, zombies. Still bloody zombies, isn't there? Fucking zombies. It'll be fine. Look, we can learn to live with them. Oh, some groups come and attacked us again. So obviously they were like, right, can we do this episode in black and white at least? Don't be surprised if we get a black and white episode in this series, to be honest.
Talking about black and white, we then move to Letty taking Ruby to show her the house that she's bought on the north and very white side of Chicago.
Nice segue.
Thank
Good
you.
Good segue.
Ruby is a little bit uncomfortable about this, but Letty says that she wants to turn it into a boarding home for people that, you know, black people who need somewhere to live, need a bit of help, and it would give them an opportunity to kind of rebuild their bond as sisters. And, you know, coming after this bit of text and giving us a bit of grounding, this is really interesting because this is something that happened and was really hard work. John, you liked the beginning of the episode, or say the first sort of 30 minutes, and I think this is a big part of it, and that theme of, you know, people of colour moving into predominantly white neighbourhoods and the challenges around that. How did you feel about this opening, you know, showing them around the house and all that storyline?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it and thought, well, that's definitely a haunted house. I mean, like, you don't have to put that in the listing. Look, it is interesting, and I was kind of like... At this point, I thought, I wonder how this is going to play into the rest of the series. And obviously, I mean, it probably won't. Probably the house will probably just fly away and it'll just be like, oh, don't worry about that. We'll just move on to another
thing. Wizard of Oz!
I think the setting, I thought that looks really cool. Sort of like Castle Rock vibes, to be honest. Obviously, we get the episode in season one where you get that random family that buy that house and then they just go mental. But spoiler for Castle Rock season one there.
Yeah.
One of my favourite episodes of that season, funnily enough. So obviously, when this begins, I'm like, oh, this could be a good episode. I could really enjoy this episode. I will say, More of that. More of the sisters just talking. Like, do you know what I mean? You can just have dialogue. You know, like a goblin doesn't have to run past in the background to be like, oh yeah, now this Gaz is good because it was a
five bloops.
Seeing it. I thought it was all right. I quite enjoyed it, and again, like, it's not heavy handed to for them to take that house in that neighborhood, because it is touching on that racial aggression, suppression, segregation. It's not forced. It's not like they're just in a cafe somewhere again, and like someone's like, "Oh, you can't eat here," or blah blah blah. It's like,
it's different.
Much like the Sundown Town stuff. It's like, you know, good historical pretext. You know, it doesn't feel forced. Obviously, when you get goblins and stuff and monsters, then it fucks it up a little bit. But up until this point, fine.
Yeah, and that conversation, Em, I just wanted to reference, like, you know, in that conversation, they talk about a family moving in, like there was a riot across town. That is a factual event that happened, you know, where a literal mob of like 4,000 white people stormed this black family as they moved into their new home and they had to flee. So I thought that was very interesting.
And there
interesting
was a lot
well.
Of that happening. Yeah, and I think exactly. It's interesting to bring it up. You know, and John's right in saying that it isn't forced, and I think it's done really well. And actually, you know, I agree with John here that I'd like to see more of that relationship building or kind of exploration, because I think Len, you and I have got a very different perspective here, because I'm watching this going, I know these characters I've already built a relationship with them. And actually, if you step away from that a little bit, which is a little bit of how I felt about this episode and why I gave it 3 blueberries, is that the audience who are just watching this don't get that. They don't get that insight into the relationships that we have. There are some quite sharp turns. So we move from here to Atticus, who is staying with Hippolyta and Diana following George's death. It's pretty clear here that Atticus has probably overstayed his welcome a little bit, and that he knows it and he feels uncomfortable, but he wants to care for them. And we've just missed this chunk of them recovering coming back from George's death, which I think is fine, but we could have had a little bit more of it. So Atticus then goes to see Montrose, and it's a pretty awkward conversation where they kind of try and talk about the fact that they can't talk about what happened, so they're so isolated with that.
His interaction with Montrose, I think, is brilliant. I think that's actually one of the highlights of the episode. Just,
they're really good together, aren't
really
they?
Really good. And the way that he's like, hey, look, I think maybe I've overstayed my welcome with Hippolyta. her name every time, I have to just think about it. And he's like, can I stay here for a bit, just a couple of days? And Montrose is just like, yep. And that's it. Walks off. Like, no, like, yeah, of course, you're my son. Like, yeah, but however long you need, just, yep. And it sums it up perfectly in one word and one tiny bit of acting where he doesn't even turn to face him. He just plays the record and walks out the room.
The whole Montrose and Tick relationship, we've heard little nuggets of information about it throughout the last two episodes. About how Montrose reacts to the way that Tick idolised some of the authors that he loves and the books he was reading as he was growing up, because he felt he wasn't being a proud African-American, idolising people like Lovecraft, and then learning the truth about him, and then also speaking to like an army recruiting journalist to try and say how to get more African-Americans into the army and stuff like that, and just how they've always butted heads throughout Tick's life, essentially growing up. And this is the first time we're getting a real sense of that in these close confines that Tick grew up in with his father. And Michael K. Williams is such a fantastic actor. Like I said, this episode shines in these moments between characters, especially Letty and Ruby, and I think Montrose and Tick here. So I hope we get more of these discussions as the season goes on, because it's great stuff.
No, totally agree. There is one bit of these opening scenes that I'm going to throw to the floor for deciphering.
Throw it on the floor.
Put it on the floor. The cutting room floor.
So Hippolyta in these scenes is seen ripping pages from Dracula, which we later discover is George's favourite book. Anyone want to hazard an interpretation of this?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm interested to see what you guys think, because I'm going to talk about Dracula later on in Cthulhu Corner, but I was a bit baffled with this. Is she just ripping the pages out in frustration?
I think it's probably... She's probably reading it and she's like, there's too much going on in this story. So, much like this TV series, if we just skip loads of shit, get rid of all that. All right? Don't worry about that. Yeah? There's six pages here of someone's funeral. Don't worry about that. 3 weeks later. Come on. Maybe that's what it is. The re-edit.
Oh, Hippolyta is the John McCann of the Lovecraft Country world.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. So we start to move on with the action now. So Letty is in bed. Clearly the house is quite hot and the blanket keeps getting pulled, first by a disembodied hand and then by a woman with what we later discover has a missing jaw, which was fucking rank.
Yeah, gross.
Absolutely fucking rank.
That walking dead again.
Yeah, well, she was speechless, wasn't she? Yeah.
I think Kat got a tongue.
Ooh, no, that doesn't work. That's disgusting.
No, it doesn't work at all, does it?
No,
it doesn't
work at all. Terrible.
Is she killed by a lion or?
Right, shut up. I'm moving on. That's just too much. But I think you've got a bit of a juxtaposition here. So you've got that bit with the woman with no jaw, and then we move on to actually Letty heading down to the basement to sort the heating, because she can't open the window. Everything's overheated. Clearly someone has fucked up something with the boiler. And you've got the opposition of creepy jawless woman, horrible racist neighbours here, which I think is really fascinating.
Yeah, there's haunting and terror occurring inside the house and terror occurring outside the house. No escape.
Yeah. Really interesting, and being able to see kind of the difference both the supernatural and the human here. So they're doing a lot of moving in, and Atticus turns up, and Letty's pretty surprised. Hello, I'm here. And asks him to stay at least for the housewarming party. She's got a spare room, and so he agrees to do that. And then this is where we get, I think, one of the best scenes, where all of a sudden you can just hear car horns outside, and everybody goes out onto the front porch, and you've got a group of white men who've parked their cars out there, strapped bricks to the horns, basically to try and drive them out. I thought this was excellent.
Just a minor point, but it's probably worthwhile. Atticus doesn't actually agree to stay. He says, "No, I better head back to Florida. Tom and Boss would only be a couple of days, and it's been a month." And it's only after he goes out and sees those guys standing there at their cars with the horns going that he's like, yeah, maybe I will stay a bit. Because he knows, like, you know, there might be a bit of trouble. He might be up for a rumble here. Rumble.
Mm. Rumble.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I wasn't sure that we'd get too much of this, because it seemed to be moving heavily into the kind of supernatural stuff, because obviously when Letty's down in the basement there's the banging and, you know, she's scared shitless, obviously, because you would be.
I'm well brave.
Well brave, yeah.
You're the goblin, mate. You're the goblin running around. Of course you're brave.
Gaz is
how would I be the goblin? Surely the goblin would be John going, oh, I hate everything. Goblins are like angry and hate things.
John is definitely a goblin.
Gareth is more like the Harry Potter house elf thing. Dobby! And John, you're like a little troll or something that's running around. That's what's
big
happening.
Troll.
So, and I'm the really cool, troll. Buff, heroic knight that's
slays
you both.
You're a wanker, mate.
You're fucking Draco Malfoy, mate. So,
oh, the blatant sexism here. I haven't even been cast as anything. Just ignored.
No, you're not in it. You're not in it.
You're wrong.
I can't even host my own podcast. Let's talk about the housewarming party, because this is cool.
Yeah.
Like, this is
fun.
It's really fun. A lot happens. We've got Ruby on the mic with the band. There's some sexy time. There's some dancing. Yeah. There's punch. There's all sorts of exciting stuff.
There's punch. Where did that come from?
There's punch.
This is
live.
I tell you what, though, build just because up. we're in lockdown, right? And like the thought of having a big party is like the best thing ever at the moment that none of us can do. So to see it realised in this fun way, I thought was just something that I was just like, oh, I really want to have a party. Like, I've just moved into this house. I want to have a housewarming party. And then I was like, yeah, but will anyone bring punch? Do I have to make punch? And then it all got into punch. And
You have to make punch as the host.
Of course, I love this whole setup. It's fun. It's brilliant.
Mm.
Gaz, what did you think about Letty and Tick hooking up? and the punch, yeah.
The punch looked good.
Alcoholic
looked
good. Punch.
I love like an orangey looking punch as well. So that would have been right up my alley. And yeah, go on.
It's just punch.
He was going to say.
I mean, this is set in the 50s, and even that is dated. Emma, you're like 250 years old, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
this is good. The Letty and Tick. It's about time. We've had two whole episodes without them.
Yeah, come
together.
On. I've been waiting on. Speed weeks for this.
That isn't true because last week he did have a
John's
snake
been
penis.
Shipping them.
Yeah.
Yeah. John's been like, I can't wait for. I'm shipping Tick and Letty. He's like, yeah, obviously, John. We're all with you on that, mate.
And maybe I am naive, but after they finished. Pardon?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a name for them.
Oh.
Licky.
Oh.
And Licky. Letty and Tick.
Yeah, Licky.
Liticus.
How about Letic?
Liticus.
Letic.
He did what? I didn't see that.
Okay. Enough of this.
I have to change my bloob scoring.
what minute and what second?
Anyway, after they had that really long sex scene.
That's been two whole episodes of build up. How could they hold it in?
I was well impressed.
Hey. We're all Minutemen here.
Correct.
As we know.
And we've earned that name.
Not all of you.
But we are Minutemen.
What's
we're
that
not
mean?
I'm here too. I'm not a Minuteman.
No, but we're referencing our group.
I thought you were giving away a big secret here, Emma.
Jesus Christ. Absolute bombshell.
We are Minutemen. We're not 45 second lads. So Tick can't be in our group.
It's not the same ring to it.
The 8 second goblin.
Oh. That's just so wrong.
And the virgin, Draco Malfoy. Oh. But
oh dear.
It was interesting because they've obviously been really shipping the Tick and Letty relationship. And obviously they do get very close in the book and you get the sense that there might be some sort of romantic connection there, but it's never explicitly shown to you. The fact that this was Letty's first time is obviously such a massive deal for her. And like, it, you know, I'm happy that it was with Tick, you know, because I think he's a fantastic guy. I really like them two as a couple. I think he's very understanding. Even the way he dealt with the situation there, I felt was very understanding. He's just a cool guy.
Cool guy.
And Letty's cool sort dude. Of like, but Letty's sort of like, once again, like that she's been resurrected, right? So let's get back to this thing that she was killed last week. She's searching for something here, a feeling. She wants to feel something, right? And I think that's where this comes from.
Yeah, really interesting. I think we've dissected that quite
thoroughly.
Thoroughly, yeah. The episode takes
much
a turn
longer
here.
than the scene actually took as well.
Yeah, and for some reason I now just feel really uncomfortable because all I can think about is the 8 second goblin. So we take a pretty sharp turn here in the episode. They come back down to the party, everyone's having a great time, and then all of a sudden we spot this huge burning cross in front of the house, and Letty has Letty has had enough. And she grabs a baseball bat, she marches outside, and she goes hell for leather on the cars with the bricks on the car horns. The lads are standing out there with their shotguns ready to protect Letty if needs be. Hippolyta pulls the car around, drives the guns away. The police turned up, they're arrested. John, you mentioned this scene right at the beginning. How did you feel about the way this was presented to us?
Yeah, look, it's however much you'll see kind of the burning cross symbol in film, it always kind of brings it home. It's a horrendous symbol. Like it always
it's
feels
visceral,
like
isn't it?
Very, yeah, like, I mean, it's despicable. But even more so the kind of juxtaposition. We're talking about, you know, a religious family, and the irony being that we've got two sets of people that all believe in the same God and religion, and we won't get into that. I'll save that for another podcast. But yeah, the response where it's just like, I'm not going to cower. I'm sick of this. Right, get the baseball bats and shotguns because I'm going to fucking start smashing some shit up. And yeah, I mean, she's good. She is very good. As I've said before, I don't have a lot of complaints about the actors in this show, but I it's all over the place. But that is great. I was intrigued to see where it would go.
It's the best scene of the episode in my opinion. And such a those horns have been going on for like the last 10 minutes and I was getting fucking frustrated of them. So it was very cathartic for her just to, and I have to, you know, smash those bricks away from the wheel. And I have to say, if I could wield a baseball bat as cool as she does and smash those windows in, that is a fucking good look. She was rocking it. Like she, that just everything about her character here is everything about her in this episode. Defiant, strong, and refusing to give in to malevolent demons, or, you know, who are also, you know, racists, massive racists, and the massive racists in the neighborhood and the ghosts in the house.
Yeah.
So, very good.
Yeah. Very cool. She didn't have to necessarily drag the baseball bat down along the pavement as she walked out, but it was fucking cool when she did. Like, I loved that. Yeah. I was just going to say the actual scale of the cross, like it, that, you, when she walked past it, it's massive. Like, you see it in TV shows and stuff all the time. I've never really thought about like the size of it. Like, that is it's a terrifying image. Massive, massive cross.
It's crucifix, isn't it?
Like, I know, but it's it's huge,
horrific, and you know, like, terrifying. And you don't, I think the impact of it in this was incredible in an awful, awful way. And it, what I think almost is the worst part of this scene, not in terms of quality, but in like emotion, is that right as she finishes, she drops that bat, she gets straight on the floor, hands behind her head, ready to be arrested by the police.
It made me so angry.
She just immediately drops like that. So angry. Really angry. But it does then give us an opportunity to set up for the rest of the episode, basically. So she's arrested, she's in the back of the van, an officer is questioning
Captain Lancaster.
Yep, he's a wanker.
Captain Lancaster, he's a wanker. We'll see more of him, don't you worry.
Yep, we will. So he's questioning her on why she bought the house, who told her to buy it, and he tells her that there were 8 black people, or body parts of people, found buried in the basement of the house that she now lives in, which sets us up to move on to the haunted house element of this story. Len, how did you react to the kind of back of the van?
Yeah, it's interesting because I felt like, as someone who knows the story behind this house and what's going on behind the scenes here, which we get a little peek at towards the episode, the end of the episode, when Christina Braithwaite turns up. There's a lot of moving parts that sort of fall into place in everyone's individual stories that create this through line. And I understand why it seems, like John said, it seems like, oh, they've just forgotten about what happened in last week's episode. And it's not the case. There are things that tie together. There is a threads that weave in and out of each episode and then bring us back round to a sort of end to this bigger narrative that's going on. And it was interesting for me to sort of try and interpret what's going on in the back of the van as someone who hasn't read the book, right? Because they're just throwing information at you here, like, who told you to buy the Winthrop house? Who did this? I thought it was very information heavy. And like John said earlier, you can excuse the exposition because they need to get this in there somehow. They need to get it in there somehow.
No, but also, it's a policeman, and like that's what he's doing. He's questioning.
Yeah, investigating.
So it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah,
like,
it's
if it was just some random person that's like, oh, why have you bought this house? And then you're like, why are you asking these questions? Go away.
Yeah.
It's legitimate, isn't it? It's a legitimate conversation.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's not, because they should leave her alone, but, you know.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, Captain Lancaster is an absolute dick. You can see that he's like one of the head honchos in the local police force. He's a massive racist from what you can tell as well. Like, there's more going on with his character, as we will see. But he's firmly on the side of like the neighborhood that they're trying to pioneer into. So it's interesting to see where they go with it, but I liked it.
Nice. Well, let's move along. So we then move to Letty in a bar, a diner, where she's clearly been for some time. She's got newspapers all around her. Tick turns up and she's like, my house is haunted. And she explains some of this background. So the previous owner was a white scientist who did experiments on black people. This very, very much links to some pretty horrific stuff. Pretty horrific sounds like I'm dumbing it down. I don't mean to. Absolutely horrendous things that happened in America to marginalized people of color. The Tuskegee experiments are one of them, and there are many, many others. So it's interesting that you get, and I think we mentioned this in the first episode, stuff that we might not necessarily know about. So like sundown towns, that gives us an opportunity to go off and say, what is this about, and learn about it. But also it sets up very nicely an opportunity for a haunted house. So in order to try and sort this out, Letty brings a conjuring lady, witch, magical lady.
We never get told what sort of magic she practices, but we know that
she
magic in this world
goats.
Exists.
So ghost sacrifice, seance.
Always goats,
isn't it? Always. Yeah. Gaz, this is where we really start getting like...
No wonder they're always screaming. No wonder.
This is where we start to get like super supernatural. You know, there's a seance. They're in the basement. And at the same time, we've got the three guys who've been tormenting Letty, breaking into the house to cause some trouble. Gaz, what did you think about this whole...
Well, this is where the...
disaster.
The horror and the gore gets ratcheted up a few levels, because we seem to have missed the bit where Letty sees all the photos have these scratches on them or something, some kind of line on them, puts them together, and a face comes out of the floor and says, get out of my house.
Go
Witch.
Away. Get out yeah. of here immediately.
Which
this is Len my is... house, honestly.
I don't know how Please. I could have skipped that. Sorry, everyone.
No,
that's the worst. That's the worst bit of the episode.
It is a bad
Maybe
bit.
It's very goosebumps, like Gaz said. Yeah,
and it's also very Ghostbusters too, as you said. But it, and I thought at that moment, I thought, shit, this episode's about to fall apart. And maybe it did in a way, but I liked this last really intense kind of few scenes. I thought the horror was horrific from this point forth, and it was very gruesome. And I mean, to be fair,
macabre.
It was. The sort of the chanting and. The books flying around the basement and all of these ghostly apparitions. It all happens very quickly. And like I've said before about this show, it subverts a lot of expectations, because often, and you know, going back again to an earlier scene when like the blankets being pulled off Letty, and you just see the severed arm doing it. Like, normally you wouldn't get that. You'd see the blanket being pulled, and you'd never see what's doing it, and that would come much later. And again, there'd be some chanting, there would be this sort of seance-y type thing happening, and nothing would happen the first time they try it. And there's none of that kind of build-up. They just kind of go, this is what's happening. And again, it annoyed me last week, and I think maybe last week I just had this impression that this was a series that was a coherent narrative the entire way through, and so I had certain expectations, and when they weren't met, it annoyed me. I totally recalibrated what I was expecting from this show, and I think things that happened like this might have annoyed me if I hadn't had that recalibration. But as it was, I really liked it. I liked this this R-rated Home Alone.
What I really segment. Liked about this was that Letty basically called upon the people who have been murdered by this mad scientist, and they came together to help her, because that echoed so much from the book for me, and it was quick, and actually that's part of the reason why my score is lower this week than it has been, because I think this could have been a two-parter again. I think, you know, like we had one and two, we could have had three and four, and yet it's you know, Monster of the Fortnight rather than Monster of the Week. But that bit for me was great, because it harkened back to the relationship that Letty in the book builds with the spirits in the house, and I really, really liked that.
And that relationship is very important later on in the story, actually. The thing, I thought the horror in this part of the episode was right on the money. I love the gore. I love the macabre, just nature of it. The effects I thought in this part of the episode were brilliant. I can't knock any of it. I thought it ratcheted it up so quickly, and like Gaz said, it turned into like a Hellraiser type situation where they just dialed it up to 11 and it was anything goes. And I can understand how this is such a whiplash turn to go from essentially 10 minutes ago you had the interrogation in the back of the van to this. You could never make that jump. Like, there was no way someone watching the episode would go, you're going to, in 10 minutes, this is where you're going to be. Goat blood on your forehead, seance, and just, it's going crazy. But like you said, Em, it's such a refreshing change to have this story about this African-American family exercising a ghost. It's usually like against a white family, and it's usually like the other ghosts want to like send them to hell or something like that, but this time it was calling upon their ancestors and, like, you know,
well, again,
fellow people who have suffered to help them, and that for me is such a subversion of what we usually see with these poltergeist stories, that I really enjoyed it as a sort of twist. And once again, shows how Letty is just such a strong character, and she smashed it once again, like easily the best character in the show so far, with, you know, hands down.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's talk about the final scene of the episode, which actually includes what I think is one of the worst characters so far. We've got Tick and Christina Braithwaite. This scene reveals to us that she helped Letty get the house because she wanted to find some of the pages of the Book of Names, which Winthrop, who owned the house, hid somewhere. She's using Letty for that.
This is lore-heavy stuff.
Yeah, in order to create spells, including one that she talks about that her father had, which basically was, you can't harm me, I'm untouchable. Tick has gone there to kill her, but he can't because he's frozen. John, what did you think of this close to the episode?
Oh God, you're better John for this bit, are you?
I saved him for this.
You've avoided speaking to John for about 20 minutes, and I feel like that's been
probably
deliberate.
Rightfully so, to be honest. I applaud all of your enthusiasm for what they're attempting to do, and I think in your own heads, you kind of like, no, that could. I'm pretty sure I enjoyed that. But I'm all about execution, man. Like, just to come back to the last point, I mean, you did skip over me there. But, you know, I love Lord of the Rings. You know, I mean, that is fucking fantastic. But, and spoilers here for Return of the King. But to be honest, if you've not seen Return of the King at this point, yeah, fuck you. So, Ghost Pirates, yeah?
Yeah, they're the worst bit of the thing, yeah.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Terrible, yeah. And that's a five-bloob film. But,
yeah,
you know, however enthusiastic you want to be about, you know, 9-10 hours worth of film footage, when it gets to that bit, it's like, oh, what? Who are these guys? Like, why have I only just come up and they're invincible? And then it's like, well, we'll use you to fight this bit. Now we're going off to the real battle. We just go off, just do whatever you want. Okay. And you're like, oh, awful. Terrible execution. So a lot of this is kind of like, I look at it and I'm like, okay, I mean, I sort of see what they're trying to do and it probably works on paper, but it's just execution. I kind of, I'm sick of it, to be honest. I was just, honestly, just rubbish. But anyway, and then we get to this last bit. And I, you know, I'm not going to do a worst line of the week because I can't get hold of the script of this show. What I will do is kind of worst exposition of the week. And it's this scene. It's just like, what is this?
Yeah.
Honestly.
This scene is, yeah.
Just this scene is, this scene is, yeah. Just add that in just to explain some stuff. Okay, finish.
What no, I like, what there is this? There's a funny line from Atticus, which I think is meant to be the audience, essentially. It's a very much a, I'm winking at the audience, which is like, I don't need a history lesson. The funny thing is, actually, and I think this is going to be very difficult, the whole Winthrop-Braithwaite rivalry, which is so integral to the story, the overall narrative, at some point they are going to have to discuss that more. And this scene for me, I don't know why they've changed the character of Caleb Braithwaite to Christina.
I hate
it. It's not working for me. Caleb Braithwaite, and once again, John talked about execution, is a very interesting character, and he's kind of cool. He's a bit of a dick, but he's kind of cool. He's like the sort of Braithwaite that you like. And they've tried to change it so that Christina now has also this dilemma because she's a woman and she's also going to be, you know, not allowed to do the same things that the white men are allowed to do.
I just don't engage with
it. And I don't like the change because I feel it's very forced. I feel it's a very forced change. The line at the end of the episode where she says, and you can't go around killing white women. Now, that is an interesting line and I understand what they're trying to do because the whole idea is that throughout history, and you're talking about these experiments that in this episode happened on the African-American community and the ghosts that we see at the end of the episode. And throughout history, that is the case that, you know, people sometimes have turned a blind eye to that violence. But if it was a white woman that was killed, then, you know, it's all over tabloid news. And I understand that point completely. And it is, you know, I just felt the line was very heavy handed and I felt the story was in the episode that was interpretable. I didn't think we need this heavy, clunky scene at the end. You know, I get what they're trying to do, but it was clunky.
Yeah, so just to end on it, I mean, Gaz might have enjoyed it and you can ask him, but now I'm just going to read out some stuff here. For I said this to Michelle, actually. I was like, just listen to this. And she was like, Jesus, that sounds awful, because she's not watching it. Although it is me saying it, so it's all going to sound terrible. So we've got, you know, the... just... Honestly, this Garden of Eden stuff is just like, fucking hell. And when she's saying it, I'm just like, oh, this is painful. You know, Order of the Ancient Dawn, Sons of Adam. The last owner of Letty's house was a disciple of the man who stole pages from the Book of Names, which provides spells to order members. I'm just like, are you fucking having a laugh? Is this a HBO show? Yeah. Honestly. But
can
you
stop?
Know, as I say,
can you stop, please, John? Because you're making me want to go and watch that scene again.
that was a painful last scene, and but that the beauty of that is that it confirmed for me that this is not for me. This show, it really isn't.
Yeah, I think the last scene was a shame. But in an otherwise excellent episode, I felt it actually did detract from a 5 blue for me, that last scene.
I agree. I didn't like that scene. But I think maybe it's timing and its placement makes it a lot easier to write off. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes, I've right at the end, sack it off. Yeah.
I've made up my mind about the episode and then that happens and I'm like,
what if I don't really care. What if that last 5 minutes was someone getting out of a shower and it was a dream? So would it still be a 5 bloobs, eh?
Oh, I thought you were saying much better. Then yes, that would have been much better. 6 bloobs. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I think we've dived into quite a lot of this plot. You know, we can't talk about everything, but we have done our best. I think that it's time for us to take a little jaunt over to Cthulhu Corner.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cthulhu Corner. All hail Cthulhu. Now,
come, everybody.
All hail Calusu.
The first literary text that we're going to bring up that is mentioned quite a lot in this episode, it's George's favourite book, it is Dracula.
And Bram Stoker?
We know it's...
Yeah.
Correct, Emma. Thank you. I thought that was implied,
one book.
five blueberries.
George actually quotes Dracula in episode 1 when they're getting attacked by the Shoggoths, and I was like, oh, that's an interesting quote, not in the book, we'll run with it. But I think Dracula applies to Letty this episode, because we were talking about you know, being brought back from the dead, this thing that Letty has achieved. She's back from the dead and she's hungry for life. Now, this is a weird episode for her, because you have her sad in the church. She's coming to terms with what's happened to her. We discussed this. And then throughout the episode, she's very happy. She's putting on a performance to people. She's trying. She has sex with Atticus, which is her first time, like I said, searching for that feeling, searching for emotion to
quite
be human again. Yeah, very good. To be human again. And I think that is something that is very heavy in the Dracula text. So for me, not only is that George's favourite book, but I felt that that story completely relates to Letty in this episode. And it was fantastically well done. We're going to talk now about The Shunned House, which is a Lovecraftian story. It's a Lovecraft story indeed, Gareth. And this is about an old house in Rhode Island. And guess what? It's haunted. And I know John mentioned that moment where Tick's sort of possessed and he's like fighting it. And there's all these faces that are going on. Something very similar happens in this story where someone that the guy cares about, his uncle, I think, is possessed. And his face keeps changing between all of the spirits in the house. So very reminiscent to that, probably a direct reference, if you will. So I quite like that one. I'm going to pass over to Gareth on over at Cthulhu Corner's Lovecraft Lounge now.
And then you're going to come back to me.
No. I've got two more, but I'm just segueing over to Gareth.
And then another one if you want it. So,
yeah. Right, good. Go on, Gareth, take it away.
Thanks, mate. Welcome to Lovecraft Lounge. Come, take a seat with me.
Come on, hurry up.
So Winthrop House, as it's known, and the Winthrop family is an interesting name. Not really in H.P. Lovecraft's catalogue, but inspired by H.P. Lovecraft. So he wrote a short story called The Unnameable. Have you read that, Emma?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was turned into a film in 1988. Now, the name Winthrop doesn't appear in the book, but it does appear in the film, which decides to take this unknown, unexplainable kind of being and give it a name. And its name is like Adeline Winthrop. So the unnameable becomes Winthrop. It's a story about like an imaginative writer trying to explain the possibilities of unexplainable things to his much more logically minded friend before they're actually attacked by the unnameable. So I wondered whether, you know, there might be some references there to some of the less than logical things that are happening to some of the characters in this show.
There you go, Gareth. Thank you very much for Lovecraft Lounge. Emma and John nodding away. They are still here. They're just so transfixed by what me and Gareth are saying.
Just cut that next week.
Say anything. What, Lovecraft Lounge? Do you want to cut Gareth
still
out?
Oh, let I him like be. Lovecraft Lounge.
Let him be. You're getting cut out next week. What are you on about?
Yeah, you're out.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You calm down. I wanted to talk about what Emma mentioned, and during this episode, there are actual factual historical events weaving into the dialogue in very interesting ways. So we've already talked about the riots that happened in 1951 in Chicago when an African-American family moved into a Cicero neighborhood. The experiments on African-Americans, and Emma, you've referenced this as well, like... two of the people named by Letty in this episode, Lucy and Anarka, they were actual black women who were experimented on decades before the 50s. Both women, this is in the episode, both women were enslaved in Alabama in the 1840s and were tortured by J. Marion Sims. He was a physician and would be known as the father of gynecology. And basically, he used to experiment on these women without anesthesia. And then he would trial all his experiments on them before doing the experiments on white women. So,
yeah, horrific.
Once again, horrific, a piece of factual information thrown into the episode in a line of dialogue, obviously, between Letty and... some of the other characters. So I thought that was very interesting. And I wanted to mention something from the book, because we're going to go on to book differences now. But in the book, I found it fascinating that the reason that Letty doesn't want to leave the house and why a lot of African-American families around that time were given mortgages was because the way it worked back then is if you were an African-American family and you missed one payment, the house would be gone from you forever.
Jesus.
Right? So you could have done, you know, $400,000 in today's terms or whatever towards your house.
You miss your last payment, gone.
You miss your last payment, you lose the house. So they used to be able to get mortgages very easily, but the reason that, you know, and they used to lose their houses because if they missed one payment, that was it. And I found that to be a shocking piece of information. And it's one why Letty is so stubborn in the book as well, because she's like, I'm not losing this house. You know, this is a gift. I'm using this gift to pioneer into this neighborhood. I'm not going to let it go to waste. So I thought that was a very interesting piece of information. Talking about book differences, Letty's not recovering from a near-death experience because she doesn't get shot in the book. But she's very religious, like Emma said. So there's a lot more religion sort of in her character. The boys at the end don't get horrifically murdered.
No.
I like that. They actually all survive. But I love the change. I think it's grim. I think it's gruesome. I think I like it when the show dials up the horror. The ghost in the house is actually that of Hiram Winthrop, who is essentially the big Winthrop, isn't it, Emma?
Yes.
And in this, they've created a new character called Hiram Epstein, who, or whatever his name is, or is it Epstein? Mad scientist. So that was interesting because the spirit of Winthrop will come into play later on in the season, hopefully. So that was an interesting change for me. And the money in the book that Letty gets is from her father in the book. Her father was a gambler, taught her how to gamble. That's why she's such a sort of smart and cunning character, because she's always looking at the bigger picture, looking at the game that's being played.
Playing the odds.
Yeah. And the change here was that the mother... Obviously, we know the Braithwaites have given her this money to get the house. It's all fabricated. We get that at the end of the episode. But the fact that she thinks it's the mother that gave her the money really adds to this strain in the relationship between the sisters. So I actually felt that was a much more interesting decision and a fantastic one, because it led to that fantastic... We didn't really talk about it, but that breakdown between Letitia and Ruby and the acting in that was... the best acting in the episode. It was brilliant. Mm. I loved it. And I don't know if anyone wants to expand on that little scene. Well, because look, I feel it would be a crime not to talk about that scene.
Yeah, it's good. And I've said before, like, stuff like that, more of that, but instead it gets replaced with just nonsense magic stuff. We're even a podcast that's become guilty of, you know, going, oh yeah, the monsters and the seance and all this. And it's like, well, you know, we're missing kind of the key moments of relationship building. And it's like, that to me is what I expected this show to be. And with the pace that this show is moving at, I suspect that those moments will be few and far between.
Mm. But this one was a good moment. This one was a fantastic moment where we really got a sense of the sisters' history. We got a sense of, you know, Letty always taking and taking and taking and never really being there for her sister, not caring about the relationship with the mother. And for me, I want to see more of Letitia and her sister. Obviously difficult now because I've, you know, they're on the outs in terms of after this argument. But man, that's some powerful stuff, and I loved it. All right, guys, that's it for. Yeah, go on.
I have a question. If you're go taking on. Questions in,
I'm taking questions.
Yeah. So there's a bit in this episode where someone references a reverend called Martin, which is Martin Luther King, obviously, and they talk about him having this relationship with a white woman, but it's all hush hush.
Yes.
In the party. At the party.
Next
to the punch. Right next to the punch.
Right next to the punch.
See, punch is important for conversation.
Punch was important. And I wondered whether or not Martin Luther King makes any sort of appearance in the books at some point.
No. Good. Off the top of my head, Emma.
But it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
What's the point in that? Why have they dropped that in? Actually.
It's an odd joke. You know, the show is going in a similar direction, but it is clearly doing its own thing. It's putting more emphasis on this overarching theme than maybe is in the book. In the book, it's just there. It's present. And I think they are trying to drop extra elements in here that sometimes work and sometimes don't work. But for the most part, I think they're doing a pretty good job. But you're right, John. I did forget about that reference, and that's a very good one. So my bad. Mm. It's time to move on to some feedback. And unfortunately, this week, because we're recording slightly earlier than usual, we have a few pieces. And if you have sent your feedback in and it doesn't get read out this week, I am sorry. It just missed the boat. It will just go into next week's feedback section. Okay, first up, we have an email from Yorick Chapfallen, who has said, "Greetings, fan critical gang. Greetings to you, Yorick.
Greetings, Yorick.
Just wanted to say that I'm thoroughly enjoying your podcast. Last week was the first time I've heard all five of you at the same time. Mm. And I really love the energy you all bring. Great stuff just watching. And great fun. I just watched episode 3 of Lovecraft Country, and wow, there are some interesting things going on in there, and there's some interesting changes from the source material. Can't wait to hear what you all think about them. Hope you're all staying safe. Yes, last week all five of us for the first time. That was interesting.
Hard,
it was good to
all
edit. Be together again.
Is that fair, Len?
Hard edit. It was hard to edit. Hmm. But I will
it's
say
it's
going to
be easier next
good.
Week, mate.
Yeah, we all have so many different opinions, and as you've heard, John's leaving the podcast now for the time being. He might come back. You know what he's like.
He will.
He'll come back. They always do.
He'll be
I'll start a counter time. One. Just me, just ranting for 15 minutes.
He's going to have a couple
weeks
off.
Interested in that?
But other than that, thank you, Yorick, for your support. And we will get more of us five of us in a podcast again. Probably for the How the Fuck Have You Not Seen That series, because that is really fun when we get five of us in those. So let's hope to that. We've been talking to some people on Discord. You can talk to us on Discord. All you've got to do is go to patreon.com/fancritical and sign up, give us some monies. You can chat to us. Laura Beamish has been chatting to us. We've been chatting about opinions on episode 2 because it was quite divisive. It's quite divisive in the old group, wasn't it?
I just like the idea of chatting about opinions. So we were just chatting about opinions, and that's it. And that's the end of that.
What's an opinion in that? She said she thinks episode 2 was a 4 blueberry. Didn't enjoy it as much as the first episode. Had some great potential, but overall enjoyed the episode. Someone who has read the book, I didn't really notice slash was bothered by rushing some stuff because I already knew the basic history. But I can see how it
but what if you didn't?
Stretched out a bit.
But what if you didn't? Yeah.
I'm curious to see if and slash how they'll follow the rest of the book based on some of the changes. Such
honestly,
as
like,
ending episode two.
Like imagine making a pizza and not cooking it and going, well, do you know what? I have had pizza before, so I'd imagine that pizza would be lovely. Come on.
Good analogy. I mean, I have to say, like we've talked about this last week, that they could have definitely done the content from last week's episode in two episodes, but they didn't. So we've had some nice feedback on Twitter, haven't we, John? Some nice feedback on Twitter.
Yep.
Every now and then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read any out?
That, are you? Nah, I've got it for you, mate. Don't you worry.
Okay.
Got it for you.
Yeah.
Chip Gross has this to say. Missed you all since Watchmen. Thank you very much. We've referenced the Minutemen earlier in this episode. We are still Minutemen. And now there is a goblin that lasts only 8 seconds.
Is that Emma?
He says this,
is it?
As a bl-
yeah. Yeah. Well, 3 Minutemen and the 8 second goblin.
Oh, my God.
I'll quit. I've had enough
they
of this.
Say,
abuse.
Yeah. They say, as a black American, it's fascinating listening to the international hosts learn about American racism through fiction. Love the discussion and commentary. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, interesting. Good. Nice feedback.
Look, I mean, that's the thing. And I think some of the feedback that we've had from American listeners has been that a lot of these shows are actually really educational for Americans too. Because there's some controversy over textbooks and who it is that's responsible for publishing them and what information gets included. So it's brilliant that you can learn more. Remember, life is a lesson.
Yeah, and it's not like we don't learn about these issues, like the civil rights movement. We all learn about that at school. It's a major part of my learning growing up, at least, and I'm sure it's a major part of all your learning growing up, anyone else in the UK, it is something we focus on, the American civil rights movement. And I like to think I'm quite well educated in the matter. But as we've talked about when we watch Watchmen and when we're watching this show, and Emma referenced it this time, there are moments in these shows that we are just oblivious to. The Tulsa race riots was one in Watchmen, and that's also referenced in the book here, and I'm sure we'll get referenced again throughout this season. Sundown towns, we talked about that in the first episode and how we weren't necessarily sure what that was, and now we're getting more about these experiments that have been done on African Americans and pioneering. So we're learning little extra bits of information that we might not have known before, and that's what the show is good at. It is good at highlighting things that aren't well known and shedding a light on them to be discussed, to have articles written about them, to have podcasts talk about them, to have people discuss them with the listeners and stuff like that. So it's fantastic to see the show making some serious dents in history, as it were, like trying to make us learn what's going on.
Just add some more feedback on Twitter if you want to read it out.
Go on. Live. So, go on.
Yeah, okay, well, I say live. It was a day ago, but okay. Mr. Aguirre.
Is he calling you that? Or
oh. I know. It's just lost in translation sometimes. So Mr. Aguirre says, John's Bloob ratings have been spot on.
Yeah.
Well,
Lovecraft Country has been a real disappointment so far. Well, no, because I would have said something like, John's sexy voice has said blah, 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 and then you definitely know I was lying. Lovecraft Country has been a real disappointment so far. Had such high hopes. This episode will be Last Chance Saloon for me. So, you know.
So it literally
let's
is.
Let's see. Yeah. So, yeah. So now we're in the DMs, so that's all good. But no, look, it's... you know, I just want to put that out there. It's not always, yeah, this show's brilliant and I don't care what's going on and I don't care it's rubbish, 5 bloobs. You know, some people out there are like, you know what, I'm sick of this. It's not good. So good on you. Me and Aguirre are having a party.
Okay.
So that's it.
We're not invited.
No, absolutely not.
Anyway, thanks, John. Thanks for
no punch allowed.
Segment. No punch allowed at this party. And back to Emma in the non-Cthulhu themed studio.
Thanks, guys. Really, really good stuff, actually, this week. Really interesting.
Surprising.
I mean, I'm shocked, quite frankly, that you've brought something
of quality.
We actually
had a discussion.
Yeah, Wasn't it good? No, thank you, everybody. I think that's been a great conversation. Lots of things learnt and brought to the table. So hopefully everyone else has enjoyed listening to it. If you have, leave us a review. We will enjoy reading them. Send us your feedback to fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com.
Think about that.
Or on our social media. You can find all of those just by searching for Fan Critical. So I'd like to say thank you to Gaz for here and Lovecraft Lounge. Cheers. Which was fascinating.
Yep. Always welcome.
Len, also for Cthulhu Corner.
Yeah, no worries. All hail Cthulhu.
Let's all say a final goodbye.
It's not the last one, though, is it?
To John. Come back.
Definitely not. For a couple of weeks. Back. See you in a couple of
weeks. Cheers. Can I just
worm his way back in?
All right, whatever. Me and Aguirre are starting one. So
that's Mr. Aguirre to you.
I just want to add something, actually, kind of jokes aside. When it comes to ratings of this episode or this podcast, you know, Len's always like, yeah, 5 bloobs. And I'm like, look, 1 bloobus. I don't give a shit. As long as we get opinions, I love all that.
Yeah,
but,
100%.
You know, if you're going to review us and you despise it that much, that's absolutely fine. But email in, you know, let's have a bit of constructive feedback
do.
Because
yeah,
100%, then we can 100%. Start a dialogue. There's nothing more frustrating than someone going, well, I don't understand why these guys covered this or blah, blah, blah. And actually, sometimes I'll read it as a summary and go, oh, I'm interested to hear more from that person. But then we never do.
Yeah.
So email
no,
in.
No, I agree.
I think getting a bit more detail... If you think we've misunderstood something or we haven't fully grasped the implications of something that is maybe an important historical moment to you or your country, and you know, we can only speak about things from our perspective. Yeah, at the end of the day, we are, including Lucy, we are 5 British people who have been brought up in our very own context, and we're watching things through that context, and we apply our understanding to that. If we don't know something, let us know. But as John says, have a conversation with us, because then we can learn more from you. That's what it's all
yes,
about.
The email address is fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. It's going to be in the show notes. It is every week. And like we said, please do leave us a review. If you have any constructive criticism, please do email us and we will happily open a dialogue with anyone. We are lovely. We don't bite. We do accept all criticism and we would love
to. Now that John's left, anyway.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, guys. Really interesting conversation, and we look forward to being back next week for episode 4. Goodbye.
Bye.
See you guys. Bring the punch.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.